Disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to AnCast. Back in the chair number two for the first time in a couple of weeks. Justin is here.
Howdy.
It's been a while, and
it has. I've missed it.
Yeah. Well, we're glad to have you back. You're always welcome here. And then sitting over in the third chair is our boss, editor in chief, CEO of Anime News Network, Christopher McDonald.
Hey, how's it going?
Not so bad. So, obviously, we should talk about what's happening on the site, because there's been some announcements this last week that we're doing some simulcasts. I have nothing at all to do with the video stuff. I'm not part of those meetings or any of that. So, I mean, I kind of found out about this a little bit before everybody else, but mostly when everybody else found out about it. So we're doing simulcasts, and I'm curious to know, I guess, firstly, Justin, you're pretty much handling this all on your own, right?
Well, I'm handling the actual aspect of putting video on the site more or less alone, but there's a whole lot more at work here than what we normally do for when we stream a video. Obviously, you know, this is the first time a show has been available in the U.S., so we want to make sure people know about it. But as far as what I do, it's only a few additional steps compared to what I used to do.
Well, because with the Funimation, like when you're like dumping Funimation stuff into the player, you're just re-encoding it, right?
More or less. And then, you know, there's a little bit of data entry just to get into our system, and that's pretty much that. With this, obviously, we get the video without any subtitles at all, and we have to assign it to a translator and a subtitle editor to get the timing up. And then we have to convert it into our own subtitle format and work that all into the player. So it's a few additional steps. And not to mention, this is the first time that we're using soft subtitles where they can actually be turned off. So we had to make sure that worked, and there were a couple bugs to work out. One of which was, there was no way to have a line break. So when you had a subtitle that was long, it just ran right off the screen.
Great. Wait, so you can shut the subs off. Does that mean we're doing stuff that's open to region 2?
No. No, this is still restricted to US and Canada. Unfortunately, we always try to get more, but usually whoever owns the rights, in this case Aniplex, they were hoping to do something else with those markets, so we, you know, have to take no for an answer.
Right. Yeah. Huh. So, I mean, how's it been? Like, I imagine you guys are pretty much working yourselves to death.
Chris?
I had 4 hours sleep last night, and I think that's the most I've had in a week. So, yeah, it's been a really crazy week. This is probably the first time I'm ever looking forward to an anime convention as a good time to rest.
Oh, yeah, you're heading to New York Anime Festival this weekend.
Yeah, I'm driving down tomorrow.
Yeah, this timing is not helping at all.
Oh, the timing's... Everything combined is absolutely horrible timing-wise. There's the simulcast, which is great right now. It also coincides pretty much with our end of quarter, so I have a lot of reporting to do, a lot of reviewing other people's reports, checking over finances, making sure we can, like, pay our bills and that people are paying us and all that. So I'm doing all that right now. I'm doing the behind-the-scenes stuff on the simulcast. Obviously, Justin's doing the technical, but I'm doing pretty much all the non-technical. And have to prepare for New York Comic Con. And then a week after I get back from Comic Con, I'm flying to Tokyo for the fall anime fair, the new Tokyo International Anime Fair in the fall, and for TIFFCOM. So I'm going to be there for 10 days. So yeah, I haven't slept much. I have a splitting headache right now from, I'm not sure if it's lack of sleep or caffeine withdrawal, because today is the first day in a week where I haven't chugged 3 or 4 energy drinks throughout the day.
Thought you'd been quiet.
God. So, I mean, I gotta ask, because people certainly weren't expecting this to happen, like the simulcast thing. And
yeah, we loved, I mean, I was just so happy to pop that surprise on people.
Well, okay, from my perspective, and I knew we were getting into the streaming video thing, and I knew that we were just going to basically be hosting, you know, old Funimation stuff, relatively recent Funimation stuff, and a few old stuff like Remy and what's the other one? Animation Runner, Kuromi.
Right.
But this is sort of different, and I kind of want to know, like, I sort of want a no-bullshit answer, and I, you know, realize I'm talking to my boss here, but why are we doing simulcasts? I'm just curious.
The idea first came up a long time ago. I think it was probably in all of our minds maybe 3-4 years ago.
It's kind of an obvious thing.
Yeah, it's kind of an obvious thing. So, and I brought it up at conventions very many times, saying, like, this is what the future of anime needs to be in outside of Japan. And I never put those words into writing. But then one day, pretty much out of nowhere, or as a bit of a surprise, Justin wrote this great industry letter. And from there, we started thinking about it a lot more. And we just decided that, like I said before, this is where the North American anime industry should be headed, at least in part. There needs to be a way for fans to watch anime, to sample it, decide if they want to buy it, decide if they just want to watch it, but still actually make money for the companies. And TV wasn't doing that. And fan subs, obviously, they've got their pluses and minuses, so we felt this had to be done. And all this was happening well before other people announced that they were doing it, too. We know that Crunchyroll, for example, is obviously thinking about getting into the business a long time before they announced their services. And Crunchyroll and ANN first started talking about it publicly at about the same time. And there was a tiny bit of friction there. It was like, oh, shit, they're doing it, too. But
we're obviously on a much smaller scale with a different goal than Crunchyroll.
Yeah, we're on a very a much smaller scale, and I mean our business setup is completely different. Like we're tacking this, like you just said in the forum recently, we're adding this to an existing successful business, whereas Crunchyroll's business is that. And the other difference, obviously, is that. We come into this with a successful, profitable business that's able to fund this new growth, whereas Crunchyroll needed to bring in outside money. And of course, that being that, Crunchyroll did bring in outside money, tons of outside money, and that allowed them to progress from that point 2 years ago where we both started talking about it publicly to now to getting a lot of simulcasts much, much faster. And the other big difference, obviously, is that this is a part of our business. It's not our core focus. It is a focus, but it's not our only focus. Whereas for them, I mean,
that's their
Crunchyroll is simulcasting.
Yeah, I kind of likened it to building a movie theater next to the magazine rack.
Yeah.
Sort of. It's because I'm trying to compartmentalize this in my head, obviously.
Well, it's kind of like the long time... movie fan owns a magazine store that focuses on movie magazines. Like, he carries Fangoria, Scream, Variety, and he's been doing it for years, and he decides he wants to open up a theater too, and he opens that up next door.
Right.
And originally, actually, it was going to be much more like that. At one point, we were really looking at doing two completely separate websites. Obviously would have business links, but would be marketed towards slightly different audiences, and would actually have different brands and whatnot. Over time, we just kind of realized that that was a headache, and it was also kind of stupid not to leverage the existing audience at Anime News Network, the brand, the goodwill we have, the brand. And all that. Why start from scratch when you don't have to?
Interesting.
I'm sure if we'd gone that route, your life would be a tiny bit easier right now.
Yes. Yes, it would. And things even on this show are going to be changing as a result of all of this. But there was there's another change coming up that will happen, I guess, shortly after this show goes out, I guess. Why don't we get into that a little bit?
You're talking about the layout change, right? Yeah. Okay, great. It's actually going to happen a couple hours before the show. Now, I came on to ANNcast with you guys back in July and talked about it a bit, and we made our first changes a couple days after that. The next step, it's not a final step, but it's one of our bigger steps, our bigger interims, will be happening on Saturday, and it's going to... That new layout will launch Saturday morning, and the simulcast will launch Saturday afternoon. Kind of what happened is that part of the layout is being designed to promote content on ANN. So we have this big simulcast that we obviously we want to promote. We want to be able to promote it, but separately from our editorial space. So we have what a lot of people have already seen. We have a marquee coming in, and the simulcast is the perfect time to launch it because, I mean, that's a big thing we wanted to promote. Originally, we were hoping to do it to promote both the simulcast and the fall preview guide. That just didn't work out just like it should have. But so it'll be launching on Saturday. And in order to fit the marquee in without really... making a mess of the whole page, we had to make changes to the rest of the page.
We had to jumble around the layout a little bit to make it a little more compact at the top.
Yeah, basically we wanted to move everything up. We didn't want this big marquee to move our news articles right off the page. And it's important for me to, like I said before, the marquee would have been used to promote the fall preview guide, and it will be used to promote the rest of the fall preview guide. It's going to be used to promote a lot of things. It's not a entirely video-driven promotional tool. It's there to promote all the content on ANN,
the big
including
stuff.
Yeah, all the big features. It's going to promote our big convention coverage. It's going to promote the... fall guides. It'll promote things like movie reviews. When we do an early review of a big title, it'll be covered in the marquee.
A huge news story that would scroll past the front page after a few days, but still needs people to see it.
Yeah, definitely. If we have an exclusive, a big news item that's an exclusive, and we have a good article, it's going to go in there too. Pretty much every section on the website. There's a space in the marquee for it when they have the content to go into it. So news will go in there at times. New columns will go in there. We're not going to put every single episode of the columns in there. But anytime you launch a new column or bring in a new writer for a column or maybe have a special edition of a particular column, it'll go into the marquee as well.
Hmm. Right. Yeah, well, I mean, frankly, pretty much every entertainment news site, every entertainment coverage site has one of those marquees now. So, I mean, we are kind of just bringing the site to look like it belongs in 2010, you know?
Yeah, we're doing what works. We've been ahead of the curve on some of the things that we've done over the years, and on layout, we tend to stick with our layout for quite a while. I mean, we've had this particular layout since 2006. And I still think it looks good, but I mean, the internet's progressed in the last 4.5 years, so it's time for us to do a tiny bit of catch up there.
So with the simulcast, like, how much more do you intend to expand with that? Like, we're obviously you're starting out, you know, pretty modestly. And, you know, our goal is not to, I would imagine, and I assume I'm correct on this, that the goal is not really to be a major competitor with sites like Crunchyroll and Funimation or whatever.
The goal is to definitely to have more than what we have right now. And obviously there's moving targets here, too. Things are going to change over time. We definitely want to be doing more than two a season. I'll say that up front right now. This is our launch season. We wanted to keep it really quiet. Like, if companies had come along and offered us 20 titles this season, I don't know if there are 20 new shows, but let's just imagine they had, we would have turned down 18 of them. We wanted one or two titles this season because we wanted a very light load to test the waters and also basically beta test our workflow, the technical changes we've made to the site, and make sure that if we have problems, we've got plenty of free time and manpower to fix them, and that and if we have problems, they're only affecting one or two shows, not 20. Now, obviously, we're not going to have 20 shows anytime soon, if ever. So right now, it's definitely one or two shows, and it'll grow a bit over time. And it works a lot with, I mean, how fast this grows and whether it even grows at all depends a lot on what happens over the next 12 weeks. It kind of, we aren't the first ones to be doing this, so the people have already been testing the waters for close to almost 2 years now. But for us, we both have to prove that that we can do a good job and also show the companies that we're working with on this, particularly Aniplex, that this is worth their time. Listen, Aniplex is working with us instead of other channels for a reason. But the way that we're working with them is just as new to them as it is to us. And our goals with them are probably slightly different than they are with their past simulcast partners. So whether this is going to be a success really depends on what happens over the next 12 weeks. How many people watch the shows? How many people go out and talk about them? And what Aniplex thinks the future for those shows is after the simulcast is done. So, yeah, it's really important for us, for Aniplex, and kind of for the whole market and for fans themselves, ultimately, that a lot of people watch these shows. Because if people don't watch it, it's going to stop happening. And it's not going to just stop happening on ANN. There are companies in Japan aren't 100% behind the simulcast idea. Aniplex wants to make it work. Aniplex wants to make it work with us. We want to make it work. But if it doesn't work, they might not necessarily just go to another company. Aniplex is one of the biggest, strongest licensing companies in Japan. A huge number of the titles on TV any season are Aniplex titles. And if Aniplex decides that simulcasting in North America isn't worth the time, effort, and money, well, it's not just bad for Anime News Network. That's bad for every North American anime fan. And it's bad for the industry back in Japan, because ultimately it'll lead to less sales. And it'll lead to either fewer shows or lower budget shows. And, I mean, I'm actually already getting sick of low budget shows. I'd like to see companies start taking a risk, but they and making cool shows, but they really have to see opportunities to market and sell these shows internationally in a controllable and profitable manner, as opposed to what's been going on. Let me just bring up something. Anime News Network's mission statement has always been to bring the anime industry and its fans together, and to help both sides. We're not an advocacy group, so to speak, but we really want to help fans or consumers and the industry with solutions that just work best for everyone. And that's always what we've been. We've been a platform. And, I mean, we've been a platform for editorial content, but it's still a platform for telling consumers and the fans what the industry is about. Now, what we're doing here, honestly, isn't all that much different. We're just becoming a platform for showing them the actual content, exposing them to it, and giving them a better experience as well, hopefully.
And a place to argue about it.
Yeah, and a place to argue about it, which is exactly what we want. I mean, I come from the same background. Well, over the last 10 years, I've been doing the exact same thing as you've kind of been doing for me right now. Come from that editorial background, from that news background. Even though I'm now 100% focused on the business side, my mindset is still very much that of a former news editor, a former editor-in-chief, who I want to see people talk about the shows, talk openly about the shows, like you said, argue about it. When I go into the forum and I see 300 pages of discussion about something, 90% of the time that makes me happy. Even if people are saying things that I think I disagree with, as long as they're not being rude or going back and forth with the city with like yes no type arguments.
Well, that never
happens. I love it. Never. So, I mean, we all want to see that happen, and I think that's kind of why we're an attractive partner for some of the Japanese companies, is that we provide that environment in a way that seriously no one else can.
All right. Well, I mean, that's, I just sort of wanted to hear some of the reasons behind it, because, you know, it's new territory. So it's always good to flesh out exactly what's happening. Okay. So people can check out those changes to the site starting on Saturday. And when do the shows launch next week, right?
This weekend.
Weekend.
Well, from here, actually, all the details will be on the site before the podcast goes up.
Right. Okay. Well, that's, people already know then, so it's not a big deal.
Yepers.
Justin, so you've been doing this for a while, but we both sort of agreed your role at the site now is so involved in licensing of shows.
Right.
That your role on this show kind of has to change.
I used to at least have a toe in editorial, but really I don't at all anymore.
Yeah, so. I kind of got to kick you out of the editorial pool.
Damn it, it was so warm and nice there.
It's fun, but at the same time, you're not exiting the show. Obviously your insight on the industry, when you can comment, is something that's important to this show. And while you may not be co-hosting every week, I'm going to be bringing in probably a parade of different people to co-host. More than likely, it will be Gia a lot of the time. And I'll also have Brian on, and Bamboo will come back. And, you know, we'll rotate out that chair. But anytime there's an industry story that you can give us insight into, you'll be back. And so that's sort of how things are going to change. But you can't really come on and bitch about content anymore, I don't think, without getting in trouble and sort of compromising things.
Honestly, every horrible thing from my past I've already hashed out ad nauseum, so you probably weren't going to be getting much more from me in that regard anyway.
Right, so you will still be the de facto co-host, however, you will sort of now be our industry pundit that pops in from time to time that when you can comment on industry matters. And whenever we have a big industry guest, like if we ever do like an ADV meltdown show, you can be there for that.
I'll be your Michelle Malkin.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Oh, I've been dying to say that.
Oh. Now I'm just upset.
That made my day. That did.
Okay. All right. So just so people know, still part of the show, but not necessarily in an editorial capacity. And that's just so we can keep things on the up and up and make sure that the lines between, you know, what you're doing in terms of licensing stuff for the site and what I'm doing, which is editorial, we have to keep that wall erected. And that's really important to me. And that's really important, I think, to the listeners. So that's why we're going to be doing that. Okay.
Awesome.
All right. Okay. Let's go ahead and get on to the guest.
Everything's coming up Milhouse.
Okay. Joining me now is Michael Gombos, the director of licensing Asia at Dark Horse. How's it going, man?
Good. How you doing?
Pretty good. So you're in New York for New York Anime Festival right now.
That's right. Flew in yesterday and just here for a couple days, see how things are going. And happy to be here with you.
Although, do you consider yourself to be there for New York Anime Festival or New York Comic Con?
Absolutely here for New York Anime Festival. And anytime there was any kind of intra-company correspondence referring to NYCC, I always was sure to note that it was NYAF.
I hear they sort of stuffed NYAF into the basement, but they kind of always do that.
Yeah, it's a little unfortunate. I mean, certainly I was walking the halls, and it's more comics-focused, but I suppose to some degree with both mixed up or both here at the same place, it's to be expected.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I've been to New York Anime Festival a couple of times. It's always in that little area downstairs. And the Comic-Con is always in the big area upstairs. But hey, they got to prioritize, I guess. So let's talk a little bit about your career and tell people what you do at Dark Horse.
I am I'm basically in charge of all the inbound licensing from Asia, be it and some of the outbound as well, but primarily acquiring licenses from Japan and Korea. So when it comes to picking up titles and going and negotiating with licensors, that's basically for, I'm in my seventh year now. It's been all me at Dark Horse, and it feels long. You know, I was here basically on the end, and I don't like to refer to our history in from 2000 to 2010 as the bubble, the manga bubble or whatever, but basically when you saw the height of the manga bubble up until now. So I've seen quite a bit here in my tenure and, continuing to learn every day.
You know, Dark Horse is, speaking of that, I mean, you mentioned you don't like to refer to it as the bubble, but Dark Horse is the one publisher I've seen that surprisingly remained very consistent. Like, you guys never went completely crazy with the manga licenses like a lot of publishers did. And you sort of held on to the titles that you've got. You didn't, I mean, not a lot of cancellations, not a lot of weird, you know, picking something up and then dropping it after a couple of volumes, that sort of thing. You guys have been pretty consistent. Would you agree with that?
I would totally agree. And we've been doing it. I guess Dark Horse has been publishing manga 23 years now. Jeez. So it's one of the core concepts, I think, of the company. But use the term consistent, and that's something I'm very grateful to hear. It's something we've strived for or strove for. It's while we have had to make a cancellation here or there in the past, I'm pretty happy that this year, you know, we had put, for example, Ghost Talkers Daydream on hiatus, and you know, the sales had caught up, and now we are continuing to publish it, and Volume 4 is just coming out. So it's good when, you know, when there was a time you had to put titles on hiatus, but when they're actually coming back into print, I mean, that's always just a great feeling. And for us, at least, it's a sign of turnaround in the industry, or for manga, for Dark Horse, at least.
So, obviously, it's hard not to look at Dark Horse's catalog and think, well, these are, speaking of consistency, in terms of what you guys license, seinen seems to be the thing that you guys pick up a lot of. So is that obviously it's intentional, but what do you look for in a license? Like what catches your eye?
Well, when I started, it's not a stigma, but there was certainly the idea of seinen was very attached to Dark Horse. And it's, you know, with Ghost in the Shell or Akira or anything, if you want to go back to Venus Wars or Outlanders, the majority of these titles were picked up, you know, by Mike Richardson and Torrance Smith in the Studio Proteus days, where they were kind of the packager and Dark Horse was the distributor. I really don't want to say stigma, but it's something that was certainly attached to Dark Horse. Always, what I'm always looking for, and I think there are other publishers that will agree with me, is that we want the property to leave the publisher. Now, maybe for comics, there are Dark Horse fans, but I really think that the people reading manga care less about who's publishing it and more about the property. I mentioned, I think it was Anime Expo 2007, when we announced Blood Plus. I was just looking at some of the forums, and some people said, oh, I've never heard of Dark Horse, but I love Blood Plus, so I'm going to go check it out. And to me, that was a great compliment, when you can have your property leading you and not, you know, relying on, you know, we're not selling Dark Horse as a lifestyle. You know what I mean? We want people to pick up the books because they're legitimately good properties. And I think that's one of the things, at least, that I've been after since I've started. So there is honestly a conscious decision to license seinen titles, because I think we do that really good, and we're able to cross-promote with our American comics as well, because we are an American comics publisher, and I think that lends itself really well to the Dark Horse line. So when you have something like, you know, I never liked the whole idea of like, do you like manga? I mean, it's just the, it's kind of like, do you like movies? I think everyone, you know, likes movies, but you're not going to sell, for example, you wouldn't sell Pop Wonderland, one of our little kids' books, next to Crying Freeman. You know, Crying Freeman sold next to Sin City makes a lot of sense to me, at least. So being strong in the seinen category, even when it comes to American comics, I think is certainly a boon for Dark Horse when it comes to manga.
So it sounds like it's sort of a combination of factors here, where you can put something like a Blade of the Immortal or a Berserk on the shelf next to Hellboy, and it makes sense to cross promote them. But it also seems like maybe that's the taste of the people, maybe of you and the others working there, just sort of falls in line with what their taste in comics is.
It is, and the two titles you mentioned, though, are great direct market sellers. I mean, both those titles sell fantastically in the comic stores. So I think those make sense. It's a little bit harder with some of the our other titles, but so Blade of the Immortal, Berserk's a good one. You know, Gantz certainly has been tremendously successful for us. Even Blood Plus and the three different series we published there, one being Kowloon Knights and Adagio, and the core series being the other, they aren't seinen, but they're... they sell well in the direct market, and I think that, you know, the direct market has worked well for us in that sense. But you know, we have taken our risks in the past, and as a company, and not everything's panned out, and a lot of times they don't. But I think, like you mentioned, it's just about being consistent, and that people know that when there's a title that Dark Horse releases, and if it happens to be seinen, they're in for a treat, in my opinion.
Right. Now, speaking of stuff that did unfortunately is either on hiatus or has been canceled, the two series I got asked about the most, and you probably know exactly what's coming here, are Eden and MPD Psycho. People are really curious what the hell is going on with those two. Can you shed a little light on those?
They're absolutely not canceled. Okay. They are they're not. I don't even want to say they're on hiatus. They're just on delayed release. You know, we can't. Last year was a hard year for a lot of people. And, you know, when we're in this industry, Zach, I mean, I've seen you at our panels for a number of years now. And you have friends at Tokyo Pop or at CMX or Viz or anywhere. And, you know, you see friends losing jobs and companies going out of business. And, you know, if you can't support series that you're doing at the speed that we were used to in 2003 or 2004, I think it just makes more sense to really slow things down to where the market can redevelop maybe their appetite for it. So we're just trying to reacclimate things because a lot has shifted just even in the past year. Yeah. With, you know, and I like, again, getting back to Ghost Sakura's Dream, I think some shelf space has opened up for Dark Horse given the disappearance of other companies. Now, we're not happy about this because it doesn't make our industry as a whole any stronger. You know, it wasn't welcome, you know, this whole crash, but I thought it was inevitable. Back in 2006, you know, in Anime Expo, they asked, hey, what's up with Dark Horse and light novels? And I clearly stated, you know, we're not going to step on that bandwagon because that's what I believed it to be. And I feel that, like, in terms of prose novels, which, you know, we've done quite a few, our most successful, of course, being Vampire D. Yeah. I mean, volume one of that alone has sold almost 200,000 units. Wow. But I think when it comes to light novels or novels like Vampire D or Blood Plus, really there's just a few, and those are anomalies. In the light novel or prose novel section.
Yeah, it definitely seems to be not a place for growth right now. It's like one or two, and that's kind of it. So you've got this is being recorded before your panel, but it'll be published afterward. You've got some new stuff.
Yes, we do.
Let's talk about that. Take it away.
All right. Well, we have three. It was actually, interestingly enough, in the last week, we've had about three more things we've confirmed that are going to happen with Dark Horse and their great titles. But sadly, as we don't have images and contracts at the time, they're in the mail. I mean, they're actually in the mail. I can't bring those up. So we want you to look forward to some more news, and maybe it'll come through you, Zach, in the next couple months. But today, the panel, we're extremely excited to announce three properties in particular. The first is there's been a lot of different namings of this, you know, on the net everywhere, but Bloodline Battlefront is what we're calling it, which ran in Jump Squared. It's the new series by Naito Yasuhiro, who is the creator of Trigun and Gungrave. I'm sure most people listening are pretty familiar with him.
Yeah.
so we're really excited about that. And we've been working, as you know, with Shueisha quite closely on a number of titles. I feel we've really broadened our relationship and also the depth of our titles. And so that's one of our primary announcements today. Another one is Drifters, which is by the creator Hirano Kota, who did Helsing, which is one of my personal favorites. It runs in Young King Hours by Shonen Gahosha, also like Helsing and Trigun did. And I'm really looking forward to that. I tried to dredge up an old email when it was in its conceptual phases. You know, we'd already been talking about it, and this was like 2 years ago. And there was some really hilarious term that Hinano Sensei had used to describe it, and he had picked the words in English. Unfortunately, I was unable to find that. I wish I had. The third is the continuation of our, we call it an illustrated novel, but it's something that came out earlier this year, written by Christopher Mink Morrison and Amano Yoshitaka, doing the visuals, called Shinjuku. So we're announcing the release of Shinjuku 2, Azul, meaning blue in Portuguese and Spanish. Each of the books is going to have a different color theme, or scheme, rather, and that's the continuation of that franchise, which it sold out for us instantly, and we were already back-ordered 1,000 units the day it released. So three really big, exciting licenses for Dark Horse today, and I'm really happy to be here on your show sharing this and at New York Anime Fair talking about it.
Can you tell us at all what what the Hirano and the Naito titles are about?
The Naito title is because we go to Japan quite often. Dark Horse has always been very present. He, in his own words, I'm waiting to read the collection. It's still back there, but I read the first, the serialization, but we have a collection now. When I talked about it, he said, oh, I really wanted to do a vampire story. So even the Kekkai Sensen is the Japanese name, which I just wanted to call Bloodlines. So it's about an underground, I don't want to say vampire fighting force, but a vampiric war, I guess, if that sounds... That sounds like a good enough description to you. And the Drifters one is one that I'm looking forward to, too. It's, I think, Hirano Sensei, the term he used to describe it was time travelers fighting and coexisting ubiquitously, which I thought was pretty interesting. So it's kind of a time travel epic. I mean, the elements of that, but it takes place in feudal Japan or post-feudal Japan. You know, Naito and Hirano, Hudetani was their editor at Shonen Gahosha, and they have talked on numerous occasions and attended shows together, and I think that they get along pretty well. And I think that Naito had seen the tremendous success at Helsing, but he had wanted to put his own spin on, like, his take on a vampire mythos. Like, maybe more Anne Rice-related, I'm not sure, but he had... I mean, I remember he was reading translated some of the translated like Warhammer vampire related novels mm-hmm. that came out in the early 90s to get some sort of inspiration for his next series. So I think that there's some surprises, but things that you would expect from both.
Interesting. I assume based on their sort of work history that these are going to be very long, sort of, you know, 5-10 year projects. Sounds like.
You know, for Dark Horse, I'd love to hope so. But as far as I know, you know. Bloodline Battlefront it's done, you know, in Japan.
And oh, it is, okay.
Yeah, but, you know, I get the feeling that if something good happens with it, Naito could easily pick it up again. Because you remember with Trigun Maximum, it was Trigun first at Tokuma Shoten in Japan. Mm-hmm. And then he didn't get to do everything he wanted to, and that's when Shonen Gahosha picked the license, and it became the 14-volume epic of Trigun Maximum. So I think there's always that case with Naito, and if you looked at some of his other projects, where things are kind of a seed, where he can take a look at stuff and see where he wants to further elaborate or maybe make something more palatable for an audience. I think you can expect that. But right now, Bloodline Battlefront is finished. I think Drifters will continue a little bit longer. Hirano Sensei, as you know, does things like Helsing for a hobby. I mean, it's more a hobby than income-oriented for him.
Right.
But he's, you know, he tends to take his time, as we all know. I mean, we got email for 2 years straight about when Dark Horse would be putting Helsing 8 out, you know, like, what's taking you guys so long? Why are you so late with this? And I guess a lot of folks didn't know that it hadn't come out in Japan. It was just, like, on a very long... He was just taking his time with things.
Yep.
And I think in Hirano's case, Zach, it could be a long journey, but I hope it is, because we're always excited to publish his works. You know, and Dark Horse is excited about representing creators, you know, and publishers, but not just certain cherry-picked titles.
Right, yeah. You know, incidentally, sort of a side note here, I've met Hirano a couple of times. Usually when he comes to the States, I wind up interviewing him in some capacity. And
yes.
I get the indication that, based on your description of this new series, I get the indication he's pretty happy to get away from Helsing.
I think so, too, and I think there's a renewed energy being away from Helsing.
Yeah.
You know, Hirano is, from what I've heard, you know, he does this as a hobby. So Helsing, when something goes to hop, when it's a hobby more than you're doing it for your livelihood, I think you want to move around to a new project. You know, when people are asking about something that you did for fun rather than what you're doing for work, if you're doing it as your financial mainstay, you're going to be a little more energetic to talk about it and to do things related to it. But I think for him, it was time to move on, like you said, and he wanted to move to a new project. And you know, I'm excited to see him excited about something, and we hope that that Drifters is going to be that, and that it'll be long and really interesting and hilarious, like you'd expect from Hirano. That's, I guess, what I'm looking. I mean, his humor is it's uneclipsed in my opinion in a lot of ways, and the way he handled it, even in Helsing. But if you've read some of his other manga that he does for video game companies, a lot of satirical stuff. It's just hilarious. So.
Yeah, I hope that this. It's no secret. I'm a big fan of his, and a huge fan of Helsing. And I'm hoping that this new series gives him more of a chance to be funny, because he's a really funny guy. He has a really kind of a sick sense of humor, and I'm excited about that. So I want to talk a little bit about Berserk. Sure. So have you seen the trailers for the new anime series?
Yes, I have.
And how's it going with that title? Because I'm not caught up on it, but I keep hearing people saying things like, oh, it's not even halfway over yet, which I can't believe.
That might be conjecture, but from what I know, it's strong. You know, Zach, anytime you have a series that you're 35 volumes into it, you know, or it's going to be, we're getting 35 is underway right now. I mean, that's a long series. Yeah. I mean, and not to mention, you know, the series it's on the expensive side, Zach. It's about $15 a book.
Yeah,
but you have, you know, some of the most hardcore and greatest fans for that series. So I can't say where they are in terms of percent finished with the series. I would think that they're past 15% or 60% easily, but it's still up in the air. And, you know, it's obviously a very tremendously popular manga in Japan and here, too. So that continues to be it's one of our pillars, you know, for not just like Dark Horse manga, but Dark Horse in general. You know, it's a very representative title, and certainly one of the more hardcore titles that we have out there. But gosh, yeah, 35 volumes in, I mean, you have to think about some series that can't make it past 3 or 5, but they're legitimately good series. But 35 volumes is just, I think about that sometimes, and that's a lot of books, you know?
Yeah. It's a lot of monster rape, let me tell you.
I think people knew what they're in store for once you got past about volume 11, you know? You knew what was going to be coming more and more. So,
yeah, totally. So, given the fact that a lot of your titles are, let's say, explicit in terms of content, how much difficulty have you had getting these things onto mainstream store shelves? What sort of challenges have you had to face there?
A lot of stuff is there's the whole shrink wrap and sticker issue, and you know, Dark Horse has had to be really creative with their stickering. You know, a lot of times there'll be a cover that has an exposed breast, mm-hmm. or whatever would be the people in America. I mean, being generally a neo-puritanical society, we're going to have issue with. So, like for MPT Psycho, for example, on the cover of one of the volumes, I believe it's 9, but I don't have it here with me. There's a fully exposed, you know, female body, and it's naked and bound, and certain limbs are missing. But we had to make a sticker that basically covered approximately, you know, a quarter of the real estate on the cover. So there's just, it's creative stickering really is what we've been practicing, be it the size of the parental warning stickers or the shrink wrap. But it's, you know, it's kind of interesting because I go to Powell's like bookstore, which is the big bookstore in the Northwest. It's home in Portland, Oregon. And they remove all the stickers and shrink, you know, and it's for sale there. It's a private bookstore, but it's just kind of a nice thing to see. But we want the books to gain exposure, and we're not going to censor things. That's one of the principles of our books. Is we just, there was issue with that in the past, and we made a promise that we would never, ever do that again because we don't want to alienate the fans. You know, people, it's not like people don't have access to these books in Japan and know what's inside them in Japan. So you can't pull the wool over anybody's eyes, you know. I think we saw that happen with Tenjo Tenge. There's no reason that series shouldn't have been the most phenomenal of successes, but you know, unfortunately, and I think in the short term, it might have increased sales because it made the book easier to place on shelves, not having, you know, nudity or whatever, explicit gore or demon rape. But in the long term, it's not going to, you know, cause a lot of problems, Zach, as you know. So
yeah. So pie in the sky. Would you is Tenjo Tenge something you guys might have your eye on in terms of rescuing that?
Yeah, I mean, if this is going to be news for you, we of course had our eye on it and of course made offers on it, but didn't get it. So you won't be seeing that from Dark Horse, unfortunately. I mean, I guess I don't. The thing is, I don't know who has the rights to it, but it's not Dark Horse, and we're sad to see that one go. But you know, it just shows that there's that a lot of people were thinking like us, or at least someone else was, that someone.
So that did get snapped up, just not by you guys.
It snapped up, but it's not by us. Someone has the rights to it, and who knows? Maybe there'll be an announcement today or tomorrow. I couldn't tell you, but you know, I know that someone made a really good offer, or you know, was very convincing, because that title screams Dark Horse. You know, it really does.
It really does.
And that was when we, you know, we went after back in the day, and I think they talked to us about picking it up, and Dark Horse, for whatever reason, didn't. But this would have been like, gosh, I mean, a couple years before I started, so. I don't know. I'm really like kind of eager to hear who's got it, to be honest.
Interesting. Yeah, me too. I've been wanting an uncensored normal release of that for years. It's a no-brainer license too, because it's so very Western in its execution.
It's just a great title. Period. You know, it's a great one, and I'm, I don't want to say I'm jealous, but I'm a little envious. Whoever got that, I hope they do a great job with it, because it's one that I think now we know how to make it perform here. I mean, there's no reason it can't sell, you know?
Yeah. So are there any dream titles out there that you wish you'd have gotten or wish you could get that just sort of sit in the back of your head as like, man, I wish I was working on that?
Yeah. I mean, and I think, you know, yeah, most of us, Zach, as you know, are after the same things. So, you know, we had offers on Suzumiya Haruhi. We had offers on Kaon, you know, Kannagi, all these titles everything that is published right now, you can bet your bottom dollar that there are two or three publishers at least that had their sights set on that and that had committed, you know, marketing, publication schedules, lots of money to wanting to produce those. So, gosh, I mean, I don't, you know, it's hard to say this, but like if you see it at Yen Press, chances are Dark Horse, you know, wanted some of that too, you know, but they, especially things like Square Enix, they have a great relationship with them. And, you know, I have to say in terms of quality, you know, the Yen Press books are great. So that's constantly a company that we're looking at and we're knowing in the background that, you know, that's competition for us. You know, it's, and they have a lot of money, you know, Hachette's a big company. And Kurt's doing a really good job with this stuff. But, you know, I feel like there are titles that we wanted to do and, you know, High School of the Dead, you know, Mike Richardson, our president, helped get that title made. And Kadokawa had wanted to do that with Dark Horse for a while. But we were it was in about 2008, 2007 when we had talked about doing it. And it was one of those ones where it's like, God, look what's happening to the market. Can we afford to put out another title, like to risk money on another title that's horror when Dark Horse has enough horror titles already out there? So certainly there are a bunch. And I know it works conversely with the other titles. I'm sure there are other publishers who wanted Bloodline Battlefront or Drifters, you know, I can't imagine them not being publishers of one of that, but I think that's just, that's the give and take of it all, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Totally. So do you think things are rebounding now? Are you seeing better news these days?
Yeah. Yeah. No, we talked about this earlier this year on our website and, I think some of the other publishers felt like we were being, antagonistic about it, but, Dark Horse from June 2009 to June 2010, our sales were up 13% when it came to manga.
Wow.
I mean, that's a lot. You know, when there's companies that are laying off half the workforce, a 13% jump in sales is a lot, Zach. You know, so we're excited, but that was our, like you mentioned, it was consistency, and we're never, ever gunning for volume. We just, if we have two or three titles that are great and we can care about those, like our babies or however you want to say it, then that's good for us, you know, just to have maybe 5 or 10 strong sellers release, you know, 4 to 8 books a month. That's good for Dark Horse, and it's perfect for our size. But the manga makes up for almost half of our bookstore revenue. You know, so it's important to Dark Horse as well. It's not something we're doing, like I said, as a lifestyle. We're not trying to like, you know, get caught up in Dark Horse for manga. We want people to enjoy our titles and like our titles, but it's something we do to keep our lights on. You know, we're not doing it for fun. It's not a little test of Dark Horse. It's something we'd be committed to for almost a quarter century now.
Yeah, yeah. Unlike, say, I guess, Del Rey.
Yeah. I think there are a lot of other details for Del Rey. And Dallas, I just saw Mitsumi, Miyazaki today, and Dallas Midah is a friend of mine. And, I want success for them.
I'm looking at the moves they're making. It's pretty clear they've decided, well, bubble's over, let's get out.
Yeah, but that's, everyone wanted to be involved, Zach. I mean, everybody. Yeah. I mean, how many companies were here 2 years ago that aren't here now, But Del Rey's huge, and they're not going anywhere. And, some great people there, but it's, gosh, you think about all the publishers that maybe weren't into it, like, all right, well, we're going to do a manga imprint now because manga's hot. That actually were doing it because it was a financial mainstay for them, and they're not around, And I don't know. I feel blessed, Zach. And, when Carl Horn, of course, I'm just saying Carl, like I expect everyone to know who he is.
I think people who listen to our show know.
Yeah. But, Carl's the, Dark Horse Manga is essentially a two or three person operation. Right. We have Carl Horn and I working on it full time, and then we have editors like Philip Simone, who does Blade of the Immortal, and he did Blood Plus. And you have Tim Irvin, who does Gantz and Trigun and Helsing as the primary. There are a lot of other editors who work on books too. But we're like the two guys, so we feel really fortunate. But at the same time, at Dark Horse, being, you have your, your finger in a lot of pies. You're juggling a lot of stuff at the same time because it is a small company, privately run by Mike Richardson. He owns 100% of the company. And it's one of the biggest boons and one of the biggest, I think, I don't want to say faults, but it's one of the hardest parts is that Dark Horse is a privately owned company, that allows us sometimes some of the greatest leeway in doing kind of daring things. But at other times, there would be bonuses to being a company that's publicly held. But I think in the long run, it's really worked out for Dark Horse being able to take ventures and maybe risks that larger publicly owned companies couldn't.
Right. Yeah, interesting. Speaking of risks, a couple of years ago, maybe it was last year, at Comic-Con, you guys were talking about some live-action adaptations that you were in the process of getting made.
Yes.
One of them was Clover, which was a license rescue for you guys.
Yes.
I believe Kurosagi Corp's delivery service.
Mm-hmm.
Are those still moving forward?
They are. Kurosagi is moving forward. I really can't actually legally say how far they are, but they are moving forward.
Right,
so. And it's one of those things that just takes a long, Hellboy, to get that movie made, you'd think that would be a shoo-in. It took over 7 years to get that thing going, and that was a big hit for Dark Horse. So, I mean, as the lyrics say, these things take time, and we, it'll happen, but if it takes a little time to get things moving, they're both certainly underway. I mean, there's paperwork for these, but I can't say what stage they're at right now, Zach. I'd love to, and I wish I had a huge announcement like, Clover's going to be coming out next year or something, but I don't. So,
yeah, I'm just curious where the hell they're going to go with that. That's a challenge to adapt, I think. That is in particular.
We're working closely with Clamp directly, and that's been really a huge asset for us as well. As you know, we have a bunch of, we call them just the omnibus editions of, right now, Cardcaptor Sakura is coming out soon, but Clover and Chobits, which are performing tremendously for us. And then Sakura coming out, and then Ray Earth next year. So a lot of books, a lot of pages, great value price. We call them the Carl Horn editions in the office because that guy hasn't left his office. And since we announced his licenses, really, Zach, he's been kind of hikikomori and just stuck in his office working on those books.
Well, that's Carl.
Yeah, but it's why he delivers, those series. They're just great. And so to answer your question, I can't really talk about what stages of development they are in now. But yeah, Dark Horse is handling the rights for Corpse Delivery Service and for Clover. As you know, we announced that. I remember you sitting in the crowd, I think, with Bamboo a couple years back during our panel when we announced that. So I wish I had more news for you, Zach.
Yeah, I remember I had to ask about it because it was on the screen, but it was not mentioned by anyone on the panel. And I was like, wait a minute, is that happening?
Yeah, it was just we had Bruce Campbell and Gerard Way show up at that panel. So it was kind of we had to move through stuff quick. And that's just how Comic-Con is. It's so crazy, totally. Especially San Diego. So
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, man. Well, we got some questions for you from fans on Twitter.
All right.
So let's get to these. Okay, from Static06, why is it so much harder now to find newer issues of Oh My Goddess? It seems many of the stores don't carry your remastered editions.
Okay, well, I'm not quite sure where the person with the question is going with this. We are remastering all the editions, and we're having to catch up. So we started going Unflopped at volume 21, and now we're on 36. But at the same time, we started with volume 1 going Unflopped, and now we're at 16. So in less than a year, every single edition will be available up to the current one as a remastered right to left or Unflopped edition. So hopefully that answers the question. We're almost caught up there. There's a 4-issue gap right in the middle, but the new series are continuing to come out. And, you know, we're basically caught up with Japan with Oh My Goddess. So it's kind of like one of those, like Berserk, where we had the volume coming out every 2 months, and now it's stagnating because I don't want to say we're waiting on Japan, but we're waiting on Japan. So
right.
You should have every single volume or edition of Oh My Goddess available Unflopped in the next year.
That must be a pretty strong performer. Since you're re-releasing it, it must still be relevant, still be selling in numbers big enough for you guys to actually be re-releasing the entire series.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it is the longest running continuing series in the English language right now. It's Oh My Goddess.
Really? Really? I didn't know that.
Yep. After Nanma Nibu no Ichi, after Rama finished, it was Oh My Goddess. So, and following that, actually, is Blade of the Immortal. So the two longest running series in English that are continuing at the moment are from Dark Horse.
See, I would have guessed Blade of the Immortal first, but I think it just feels like that thing's been around forever.
Yeah, I think Blade of the Immortal is a little more, I don't know how to say this, but it's, yeah, there's some antiquity that comes with the title, just how it is, you know, how it feels.
Yeah.
Like, it is just one of those titles that feels like it's been around forever, you know.
All right, from Azrael Newtype, he wants to know how many evil politicians he would have to kill in order to get you to license Akumetsu.
Oh, man. It's something we've looked at, but I actually can't make a comment on that at this time. But if he wants a number, we'll just say 27.
Okay. All right. From Vince A., he wants to know if you plan to delve into more Kazuo Koike manga, since you did a good job with Crying Freeman and Lady Snowblood.
We're always looking at that. And actually, this is something that we haven't talked much about. But, you know, Mike Richardson is very good friends with Kazuo Koike. And I've spent, you know, the 7 years I've been here, we go to Japan and we always see Koike-sensei, and he's just a lot of fun and been a great friend for us. But you will see some new stuff. You know, people have asked, where is Lone Wolf and Cub 2? Or I guess we're thinking about calling it Shin Lone Wolf, but there are 3 Lone Wolf and Cub series out, and the second one came out from Shogakukan in 2004. It's finished at, I think, 8 volumes, maybe 5 volumes. Like, why hasn't Dark Horse licensed this? It's 6 years. Well, it's because the rights are tied up at Shogakukan, but that's still one we're working on. That's hopefully going to be the next one. And yeah, you'll see more. We have a great relationship with him. I mean, we have, Color of Rage, Lady Snowblood, Samurai Executioner, Lone Wolf and Cub, of course, and Path of the Assassin. So we do good stuff, Crying Freeman with his manga, and we want to do more, but it's really how much Gikiga can you have in the marketplace at one time, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah. So no plans on any Sanctuary omnibuses for the time being.
Well, see, that's the thing. It's a lot of times, Zach, it's a licensing issue. And Sanctuary, the titles we have right now, all of them, Koike-sensei holds the rights himself. Mm. And a lot of these titles are, you know, when Shogakukan holds the rights, it gets a little more difficult for us. You know, there's this whole landscape out there that makes it a little bit harder. And I feel, you know, one of the happiest moments is when we got Gantz, because I was told from day one, I'm not kidding, like, I came in and I said, okay, Dark Horse needs to do Gantz. And it's like, oh yeah, we've tried it, but we'll never get it because Viz exists. But so I made it my mission, of course, to do it. And it's kind of about breaking down these barriers, and that, you know, okay, Viz is your subsidiary, so what? You know, this is money for your coffers that we're giving to a competitor. And they're kind of like, oh, okay, we get it. So it's just about, you know, letting the licensor know what you can offer them, you know, that you can do for them. So Sanctuary, obviously something we would love to see. I had a picture up on my Facebook for a while of Ikigami Sensei, and I mean, he's one of my favorite artists of all time. So it's something we've thought of, but usually there's sometimes a physical obstacle that prevents us from doing that. So.
Right. Yeah. I can't even imagine Viz publishing Gantz. This doesn't fit.
Well, there is some of that feeling, and they said, you know, you're clearly very interested in Gantz, and you know, Viz does kind of, to me at least, there is the Seageeky line, and they have a lot of great titles, and Viz is just an amazing company. They have amazing titles.
Oh, yeah, totally.
But there's kind of the family element to Viz, for me at least, you know?
Yeah, I mean, even their Eeky stuff, it's all pretty lightweight. It's sure. Good, it's good stuff. I like a lot of it, but it's not, I can't, even in that line, I can't see them publishing something like Gantz, which is ridiculous.
Sure, and it's like, if you had to pick a great manga title or company, and then one of the titles would be selected at random for you to read in front of your grandma,
yeah,
you know, I would probably pick Viz.
Right, yeah.
And that's a compliment to them. I mean, really great titles for everybody. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we sort of talked about this a little bit, but if you want to expound on it, you can. From Gerald Rathcall, he wants to know, do you believe that Dark Horse's position as a U.S. comic book company has an influence on the seinen material that you license?
Yeah, kind of what we touched on. I mean, I think that our roots were in seinen because of what we published. Right. But if you want to get into interesting history here, you know, Tokyo Pop obviously had amazing success with shoujo licenses. I mean, it was, and there are a lot of great titles, and still some that like Fruits Basket, that it's just, I mean, forget about genre or anything else. That's a great title. But, you know, back in the day, the first licenses picked up for Manga Zack to be published in the U.S. were seinen. Mm-hmm. So that drove up the stock and the cost of the seinen licenses. Contrarily, you know, the shoujo licenses tend to be a little bit cheaper, so that they were more accessible, I think, for a lot of publishers. And seinen licenses stayed a little bit higher. Now, you've seen kind of a shift in the last 5 years where it's a little bit different now, but where the license prices of shoujo had actually gone up a lot. I mean, they'd increased 2, 3, 4, 5-fold. And the license cost for seinen series dipped a little bit. So I think that's just kind of an interesting little tidbit. You know, Mike Richardson had told me that, and I looked at thing at numbers, and it was certainly the case. So long story short, yes, absolutely. Dark Horse's roots as kind of a more 18-plus publisher for American comics, although we do stuff for the younger ages. I mean, certainly, it's certainly kind of, I don't know, set our compass for what we licensed initially and what we do today.
Okay, from Ben the Bear, he wants to know, do you still have the rights to Akira? And if so, are you going to reprint it?
No, I think that was publicly announced, but Kodansha USA or Kodan Comics, I'm not sure what they're using at the moment, but they have the rights for Akira and Ghost of the Shell. Summarily, we have no plans to reprint it because that would be dangerous, but I wish we could. They were great licenses, and you know, the thing is, everyone thinks it was like this huge falling out between Kodansha and Dark Horse. They're one of my favorite companies to work with, and they're the people that I work with there are some of my good friends. There's no bad blood at all. They're 100 years old, and that was kind of, I think it was one of their initiatives to start up their own segment or their own subsidiary here in America. So no, we don't have the, unfortunately, we don't have the rights for either of those titles, and I don't know if they'll ever be coming back to Dark Horse, but we're wishing Kodansha the best of luck, and we still enjoy a great relationship with them. And the Dark Horse-Kodansha relationship is one of the longest in the whole licensed manga landscape, really.
Okay, from ABCB Tom, he wants to know, since High School of the Dead is a hit, are you planning on bringing back Reiko the Zombie Shop?
Oh, man, that's my one of my favorite titles. And, you know, I get probably 2 or 3 emails a week from different people, or at least different email accounts, asking about Reiko the Zombie Shop. And I hope to bring that back someday. I translated the series, so you'd be hard pressed to find someone that loves it more than me. And all I can say is no plans at this time. We don't have anything contracted past volume 6. You know, if there's one thing, well, there's a couple things I really want to do still at Dark Horse. And one of them is finish up Reiko the Zombie Shop, because it's such a fun series, and it's, I can't talk enough about it because it's so goofy and it's so Planet Terror and all that stuff. And I think Dae Mikamoto is, he just hits the nail on the head with the kind of comedy gore core. He was doing zombies in Japan before zombies were hot in Japan. I mean, now you have Sankereya, which is a great title, in Evening by Kodansha. And you have, you know, High School of the Dead by Kadokawa and Yen Press here in the U.S., and I mean, this guy was, I think, ahead of his time. And furthermore, it ran in a Josei magazine. So this is targeted, you know, at 20 to 30 year old women by Bunkasha, a really small publisher. And it's a fun, great title in its own right. So I wish I hope that people say, wow, you know, Rayquaza the Zombie Shop was kind of a progenitor for this. I don't want to say, I say comedy gorecore, because there is a lot of comedy in Rayquaza. But I hope people, maybe it'll be one of those titles like Ghost Taco's Daydream that the sales numbers come in and we all of a sudden have a bunch of back orders and we keep going. That'd be my dream. So no current plans at the time. More than anything, I'd love to see it start up again.
Okay, awesome. All right. From North Star Blog, have you considered licensing Vinland Saga? The manga seems like it's right up your alley.
Yeah, we get that question a lot. It's something we've looked at, and to be honest, we don't have any offers pending on it. Like we mentioned earlier, Zach, it's just last year was such a rough. Last couple years have been so rough. It's, you know, do you really want to license something that you're not 100% sure about? Like, I'm 95% sure that it would sell well. I'm 100% sure that Dark Horse could do something great with the title because it is right up our alley. But, I mean, you have to make sure things, especially Dark Horse, where it's just like a couple of us, you have to make sure everything you're doing is a slam dunk. You know, it's just, it wasn't a time to be risky. So, yes, I mean, it's something we're looking at. No, it's not something we have offers on. I think, yeah, Dark Horse would do great with it, but in a nutshell, no, we don't. We're not pursuing that at this time.
Okay. All right. Same question from Ted Warner. You're under arrest.
Yeah, that's what we get a lot, too, because we the Fujishima stuff, you know, and Oh My Goddess is doing so well. And it's not something that it's like, oh, should we do this or not? It's just not something that's been tabled, Zach. I mean, it's a great, fun series, but I just, you know, you can either go for a lot of stuff and go for, like I say, I call them Sandanju tactics or shotgun tactics, where you take as many licenses as you can and see what sticks. But, you know, given license, you have to basically allocate where you want your licensing dollars going. So it's not something that we've ignored. It's a series that everyone at Dark Horse loved, and obviously we published it, so we loved it. But it's not something that we're considering at this time.
From Control 001-2000, any authors that are sort of notoriously difficult to work with? I can't answer that.
I have to just say no comment on that. Because, I mean, I love working with everybody. And I don't know, you know, difficulty, like, not rude or anything, but, you know, these are their, a lot of times their life works. So they're going to be, and they have every right to be kind of, and I don't want to say sticklers, but they're, you know, serious about what Dark Horse is doing.
Right.
You know, if you take any American comics creator, Mike Mignola said, you know, I'd like you to do this with Hellboy. You got to respect, I mean, Dark Horse is a creator-oriented company. You know, it was about creators' rights, and that's why we had Frank Miller come work with us, and Eric Powell, and Mike Mignola. And I think a lot of the Japanese, you know, where we can, we want to make ourselves as available to our creators as possible. You know, we're in the business of working with great creators. So nobody's difficult. It's just, this is their life work. It's their baby. They want to see it handled a certain way. We're blessed and honored to be publishing it. So, you know, sometimes when you have someone who's, you know, wants 7 or 8 rounds of approvals, it leads to a better product in the end. So I can't name any names, but they're not difficult. They're just very quality oriented, you know?
Yeah, most of the mangaka that I've met, I mean, obviously I'm in a different capacity. I'm press interviewing them, but they do seem fairly, they're pretty, I mean, they're hardworking, but laid back folks, especially like Hirano, who's a weird dude. Like, he's a weird dude.
Yeah.
But pretty laid back guy. Okay, from Lost Frack, he wants to know, now I'm assuming you're going to know what he's talking about here. I do not know the specific titles, but he wants to know why you've announced some licenses and then not published them.
I was sure. Well, okay, well, I think I know what he's talking about. World Embryo is one, also by Shonen Ahusha. There is just an internal snag that I can't discuss. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of what titles concretely he's talking about. That's the only one that comes to mind, though. You know, I want to be as liberal with information as I can, Zach, but just some things I can't discuss, you know? Okay.
Just asking the questions, that's all there is to it.
I get it. So I can't say why, and if I'm trying to, like, I'm racking my brain right now thinking, what have we announced but not? Like, Lone Wolf and Cub 2, I brought that up. You know, it's the rights are currently with Shogakukan, and there might be a rights reversion where the rights will go to Kuike Sensei, which has happened with all his other books that we publish. So a lot of times there are rights issues where the rights are changing hands, and the things that a lot of times we're waiting on in Japan, you know, or something's happened in Japan where it doesn't work out. You know, for example, let's say Zach, I'm the proprietor of some property, and I license it to you. But for whatever reason, I lose the rights to that, or I have to relinquish it to someone else. As a licensee, I can no longer, you know, I can no longer assign those, or as a licensor, I can no longer assign those rights to you because someone else has it. So you're stuck with maybe a contract that doesn't work. This is not what happened in the case of World Embryo. That was more Dark Horse side. But there are just, you know, there's so many people involved. I mean, take the cover of, like, just Evangelion even. I'm looking at, you know, you have Gainax, Keihara, you have Osamu Takahashi, you have Kadokawa. And when there are five or six parties involved on one license, you know, each one of those people has a say about their baby, about their work, you know, and how it looks and cover approvals. So it's not always the easiest thing. You know, we try to make it look easy, but it's hard. And sometimes it happens where we will have a license and announce something and it just doesn't make it out there. But if this person could come at me with the details, I would probably be able to discuss them. So at mind, only World Embryo comes to mind, and it was something more Dark Horse internally that it just didn't get going.
Okay, well, that's a reason. All right, we're in the home stretch. We got three left. This next guy, Zero Intelligence, is asking about MPD Psycho Volume 10. Wants to know when it's going to, if it's going to come out. And he's worried that he might wind up reading scans.
Nope, it's going to come out. So I would just keep your eyes out next year.
Next year, okay.
Yeah.
What can people? Is there something fans can do to make sure that these series that are, you know, sort of hiatus or delayed, is it just a wait for Japan, or is there something they can do? Because you mentioned Ghost Stalker's Daydream, the sales caught up, and so then you could continue it.
Yeah.
Is it just a matter of going out and buying it?
Yeah, basically. I mean, if I would hate that, you know, people have to go to scans, but I mean, if you love a series like Reiko the Zombie Shop, I mean, if I had every person out there that went and bought a volume that sent me an email, the series would be finished. You know, MPD, it does pretty well, but it wasn't one of those ones we could just keep. Because if you look at MPD Psycho and look at the book, like, it's a very, very high quality book, the paper that we use. And we don't want to have to sacrifice that. You know, we don't want to start printing on newsprint just to get the book out, because we want this to be something that people collect, you know, and love, and it's in their library and looks great. But yeah, these aren't canceled. We had to slow things down because of what happened last year, or basically the end of 2007 to early 2009.
Okay.
So don't worry, it's not canceled. I mean, that's what I want people to know. You might have to wait, but these things take time.
Okay, from Fist of the MFK, he's asking, is it true that Kentaro Miura has slowed down Berserk because he's playing Idolmaster?
I don't know about that, man. I think it's really funny to imagine, but he actually, when I go to Japan, I meet with basically all of our creators, and some I'm really good friends with, you know, Naito Sensei. We see each other a lot, and, you know, Terada and Hirano and Kuike Sensei, and you know, have met Clamp, but he's probably out of like all of our creators the one that I meet with least. So I don't know what he's doing and why he slowed down. I think he seems like he's moving at a pretty normal pace. It's us who slow down because we've caught up, you know. But I will ask him next time I talk to him, you know, is Idolmaster getting in the way of things?
Right. Yeah. Okay, and then three quick ones finally from ByReal. Wants to know, any plans for more Junji Ito collections? And any thought to releasing more Nobuyuki Fukumoto works?
About Fukumoto Nobuyuki, no. And Ito Junji, we don't have any plans right now. Although Museum of Terror was, out of like all the horror stuff we did, I like legit horror, not Reiko type splatter gorecore, or terror as we call it. I think that was one of my favorites. And Ito Junji is just one of the best horror creators out there. I'd love to see it again someday, but we did, you know, horror in 2005, 2006. It wasn't selling well, you know, and we did have to cancel a lot of series back then. But that's where we really looked, and this goes back to what we said earlier. Rather than doing these 10 titles, we'll do these three, which we know will be home runs. And it's unfortunate that a lot of those titles got caught up and got canceled. But yeah, I mean, long story short on both those would be no.
Okay. And finally, he wants to know if you're looking at any sports manga.
We had toyed with putting the Golf manga in, you know, by Kuike Sensei into our Kuike line. But we just, like I said, you know, sports manga is a risk, you know, and
yeah.
For a while we thought it was undoable. And the same goes with, you know, kakuto manga, like the fighting manga, where I think that you have some great titles, but do they work here? And I don't consider Dragon Ball Z one of those. I mean, like serious, like shamel type titles, you know, will those work in the U.S.? And I mean, I'll be honest, I thought that it wouldn't work. Slam Dunk was one of the first manga I ever read, and it's still one of my favorite. And, you know, it's a human drama, really. It's not about basketball. But maybe it's just too compartmentalized by people as being a sports manga. Like, I never thought it would work, but then you have Prince of Tennis, which worked. And we thought about it, but I don't think it's going to be happening with Dark Horse, you know? And I want to know, too, I'd be interested to know what fans consider sports manga, because let's take a title by Yen Press, done really well, called, I'm sure you're familiar with, called Bamboo Blade.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would consider that, by Japanese standards, a sports manga, you know?
Right.
But is it? Would you consider that? I mean, is Slam Dunk really a sports manga? I mean, I guess it is. It's sports. It's kind of the backdrop. But I think so many of these have issues. They're just instantly pigeonholed as being sports manga when I think really, you know, it's like Sakuragi in Slam Dunk reminds me of Tom Hanks's character in Saving Private Ryan, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like there's this change, or maybe there isn't a change, but it's this whole long series about this guy and he's trying to internalize what's going on around him and who he is with all these people and Nukala. And so I think the fans that read it, they understand that, but getting other people to take a chance on it, oh, sports manga, is a little bit more difficult.
Yeah, well, I mean, historically, it just doesn't do well here. It really doesn't. Like, the anime sells even worse. Anime actually sells tremendously worse than the manga does, which is hard to believe, but very true.
Yeah.
It does terribly here, so I can't imagine anyone taking any risk on a sports title. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, that's when we said, hey, this is great for Dark Horse. There's some reason that this would work for us. Again, we're never trying to be like the whole light novel thing. We never wanted to climb on a bandwagon. But so if sports manga all of a sudden became the big thing, if it worked for Dark Horse and made sense, then we might do it. But I don't think, to be honest, Zach, we haven't been looking at any at all. So,
okay. Very finally, before I let you go, I want to know, of the animated versions of Dark Horse's biggest manga titles, you know, Hellsing, Berserk, Gantz, all those, which ones did you respond positive? Which do you think were the best? Just you personally.
Well, I mean, I'm a big fan of Gantz, have been before Dark Horse. The movie's coming out, I mean, you know, for two of them, just awesome. Totally excited about it. I really liked the anime for that one. I thought it was done well. The soundtrack was great. I know we didn't publish the actual series itself, but we did like the Roman album of Samurai Champloo, mm-hmm. which is basically a comprehensive digest for the series. Samurai Champloo is like my all-time favorite. Those are my two all-time favorite anime, if you have to know. Okay. Samurai Champloo and Midori Days. So just to get that out there.
All right.
some, I think, like in the case of Berserk, I think I can't say anything about the new anime because I think it looks awesome.
Yeah.
And I think the old one was good too, mm-hmm. but I think that the manga maybe was a little bit. I would prefer to read the manga over watching the anime. So,
yeah.
In that case, Hellsing Ultimate. I mean, just awesome. I mean, Hellsing in general, awesome. So, but I think you can take different things because a lot of times they have certain plot points that were the same or characters that weren't. You know, and they introduce new stuff. So, I mean, like Trigun too. I mean, Trigun's amazing. But I loved reading Trigun Maximum for different reasons. I think it's just what you want out of them. But yeah, I think out of all the Dark Horse stuff that we publish, the one that was done best as an anime Hellsing would probably have my bet.
Hellsing Ultimate.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was about to say, the TV show kind of sucked. Okay, dude. Well, that's all we've got. Thank you. This was very, very good. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming on and chatting about this stuff with us.
It's my pleasure. I've wanted to talk with you guys in detail before, and if you ever have any questions, man, just anyone can ask. You know, they can send it through you, but I love answering questions because there's, you know, the behind the scenes part of this is just as exciting as what you're reading out there.
Right. Okay. Awesome. Well, hey, listen. Have a great time at New York Comic Con, and take it easy.
Thanks, Zach. Take care.
Okay, that's our show. I want to thank Michael for joining us. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, and hey, we'll see you all next week.